The past.
Jokes.
The present.
Psychosis.
The future.
And assassinations.
You are listening to COL Movies.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
I'm gonna make him an offer again.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Go ahead. Make it my day.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my
close-up. May the force be with you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand spanking new reel of COL Movies. I'm Jeff, and I would like to introduce my... Is that Gorgeous or Gregorous? No, Gorgeous. Co-host. Ray and Steve, how you guys doing today?
I'm doing good.
Hanging in there, hanging in there.
Absolutely gorgeous. I got it. All right. So, very interesting week, but let's start off with a little bit of news. First off, real good look at the Red Skull. That doesn't sound like it was really good verbiage, but still.
Mm-hmm.
So, how does Hugo Weaving look for Captain America, the First Avenger?
It's the first thing out of any of these new superhero movies that has actually made me interested in seeing it.
I think he not Chris awesome. Evans.
No, I think he looks. I think he looks awesome, and I want his outfit.
I really like the Captain America outfit.
You just want the long black trench coat.
Yeah, the Red Skull's more my style. But I think he looks cool. It doesn't look like he's wearing a Halloween mask. It looks skullish enough for me. Can y'all tell it's Hugo Weaving under there?
Kind of.
Yeah, it's kind of a...
But you can all at the same time.
Mm.
There's just something about it which still gives them a little bit of features, but it still looks very skull-ish.
Then again, if you just threw a picture of Hugo Weaving up, I probably couldn't tell you who he was.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those... I'd be like, I know him from something, but his name and his face probably won't come together for me. Honestly. I'm just being honest.
Agent Smith, what's his name from Lord of the Rings?
Elrond.
Elrond.
Hubbard?
No.
Kidding.
That's Elrond.
Might as well be.
So looking good.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. So check it out. This next one, too, kind of made me a little sad and a little excited all at the same time.
It's one of those. Another really, guys.
Well,
you really the thing you need to do is what you remake is the stuff that was bad, and you remake it to something better.
Right, and like I said, it makes me a little sad when I saw the headline, but after reading the article, I was kind of intrigued, mainly because the production company, Elk Entertainment, which they're trying to, I don't know if they've actually acquired the rights or they're just working towards getting the rights. And what we're talking about here is they're working on making, I don't think it's a reboot of Blade Runner. They're not really quite specific yet as to what they're doing with it. But they had a quote in the article that says, "Thus, this is a major acquisition for our company and a personal favorite film for both of us. We recognize the responsibility. We have to do justice to the memory of the original with any prequel or sequel we produce. We have long-term goals for the franchise and are exploring multi-platform concepts, not just limiting ourselves to one medium only." So, again, that quote makes me both happy and sad because it says, you know, they want to do it justice. Yay. They want to milk it out like a bad whore on the street. Boo.
The only thing is, does this really need sequels or prequels or anything?
You know what? I'm interested enough in the universe to go with a prequel. I think I'd like to see a lot of what went on sort of maybe off-world. Yeah. Okay. It sounds like they had a pretty interesting time off world, you know?
Yeah.
If only you could see what I've seen with your eyes.
True.
So I think depending on the way they go with it, it could they don't have to do a direct remake.
Or even if it was a concurrent, what's going on up there while everything's going on down there.
Right.
Might be interesting.
Like kind of like a parallel story.
Yeah.
Right. You can see the development of the Nexus series, the Nexus models. So, yeah, like I said, makes me both happy and sad.
Mm-hmm. It could be interesting. We'll see what comes of it. But it looks like everything right now is all speculation. Maybe we will. Hopefully we will. We'd like to, but nothing saying
yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then this next article I thought was just with the Oscars just being, you know, done and over with for another year. And for those of you that don't know, the King's Speech walked away with a whole bunch of awards, including Best Picture. So there's this huge sort of controversy beginning to swirl around the fact that the Weinsteins want to censor a lot of it to bring it down to a PG-13 rating.
Really?
Yeah, they want to bring it down to a PG-13 when they re-release it in the theaters and DVD, Blu-ray, the whole nine yards.
Oh, dear God.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so
that's weird.
Yeah, not too happy with that. I'm fine if they want to make a PG-13 version of it. I'm fine with that, like a TV version, you know.
Yeah.
But don't mess with the original. Just let it be.
Yeah, you know? Usually you see them release it and they go for the unrated cuts.
Right.
Here we are. Well, isn't that usually when they hit DVD or Blu-ray? This is when they do the unrated. So they don't really do that when the theaters as often.
Oh, right. But I just mean, but usually they go up versus down.
Right.
You often see them attempting to go down.
Well, and, this is a historic film.
I know, but why wouldn't you? I mean, that's such an idiotic move because the thing that people would buy the DVD for is to remember the original movie.
Right.
Oh yeah, exactly.
So that's just a stupid move. Unless they're going to offer it in several versions, which would also be stupid because that can't be financially or fiscally responsible.
Well, the funny thing is, and I guess I never realized this. The part in the article here says the Weinstein Company wants to censor the film because they believe they can get more people to see it that way. And in the article, they say they're probably right. Some people are avoiding the King's Speech because of its rating. There's a small segment of the population which refuses to see R-rated films, no matter what they actually contain. So it's like, really? I didn't realize that there was so many people.
Is it that significant?
Well, think of it this way. You read it right there. It says a small segment of the population which refuses to see R-rated movies. So it's like, yeah, you'll probably get more. Probably not many.
Well,
won't
you know,
piss off the people who wanted to see it in the first place.
If you keep going, you know, it goes. The problem isn't with the movie or the words it uses, because you guys haven't seen this, right?
No,
I haven't seen it all. No.
Okay. Well, there's all right. So you have the king who has a speech impediment, and there's a scene in the movie where his therapist tells him that when somebody is like angry or swearing that they don't stutter.
Okay,
so
he does this
huge montage of him just swearing up a storm. Like that's the only words that he uses, you know? So he's like, fuck, 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 you know? So, there's a couple of scenes like that. So, you know, what it's saying here is the problem isn't with the movie, or the words that it used. The problem is with the rating system, which has labeled it incorrectly. Almost everyone who sees it agrees that the film contains no offensive content of any kind. Even the usage of curse words, which earned its R rating, in context, it's entirely appropriate for a very young audience who have been properly parented. So, yeah, I'm kind of agreement here. I don't think I don't know what I guess I just don't understand what they're so worried about with this rating. I mean, you got a film that's R-rated that became, it's got Best Picture. So I don't know. I'm just, it makes me mad.
Yeah. I mean, especially for something like that, where the reason why he's using the curse words were for a reason, which if someone who is, as they say, properly parented, basically someone who's, you know, has their faculties in check and watch the movie and they see him doing this, one, they explain why he's doing that, saying, because this is a way to not stutter, is to curse and see if we can not stutter while you're cursing. And they'd be like, okay, that's an appropriate use of a quote unquote appropriate use of those terms, saying those words. So then you get to the idea of properly parented. Then you get back to the idea of why should there be a rating system when people should be properly parenting their children?
Mm-hmm. You know, because it gives the Westboro Baptist Church something to do.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think
go out front and pick at a movie for having an F-bomb in it.
Yeah, I like the idea of the rating system in a way, because instead of being able to see the movie, it can give you a general idea. I mean, there's still more than just the rating to look at. Like, look at the trailer. What's the movie about? Does it represent that there's going to be a lot of cursing and swearing? Is there going to be a lot of violence? What have you? By looking at that trailer, I would suspect that if there was any cursing, it wouldn't be like left and right or anything like that, just here and there. And this would be appropriate for PG-13 audience in general. It was rated R just because of the whole cursing.
Right. Well, I mean, this it's a really long article. It's a decent read. What they end up kind of talking about is the fact that they've noticed a trend over time in Hollywood that there's a trend away from R-rated films. Much like NC-17. You never see NC-17 movies and films, mainly because there's a stigma that goes along with that rating. And much like they're saying with R-rated movies, people just will not go and pay for a movie that's NC-17. So if you've noticed over the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, think of how many movies that have come out that, like, say their original version, which was released, you know, 9 or 10 years ago, was a R-rated movie, and now it's its sequel, and it's PG-13.
Yeah.
You know, because they're censoring it because they realize that they can get more people in the theater if the film is rated PG-13.
But you know, that's, you know, I don't have a problem, personally don't have a problem with the movie being released at a certain level.
Right.
That's fine. But it's the issue of, you know, removing content of the movie that's already been out.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly in the case of The King's Speech is the issue, because it just won an Oscar for what it was before. Mm-hmm. So
why censor it?
Why censor it now, you know, makes no sense. I mean, I you know, and I understand people, you know, I'm a sucker for a director's cut, you know, and that kind of stuff. And sure, but you know it's a director's cut when you go to buy it. So you make your decision about, do I want to go ahead and buy something that's going to be different from the original?
Right.
You know, because you usually have the choice. Do I want the original, you know, theatrical version, or do I want the director's cut? But if you want it to be the PG-13 cut, then fine. Then I guess you can have that option too. But I just think that it's kind of dumb to go backwards in this case.
Right. I guess I would, like, if they're going to do this, I want to see both versions in the theater at
the same DVD. Time. Yeah, or both the versions on the DVD, yeah, like the original and the PG-13 version.
Right.
You know,
show it with your kids.
I'm sure on Blu-ray they'll be able to have all of it somehow. So,
yeah. So, speaking of Oscars,
yeah.
I almost feel like I should have some music in the background.
I mean, truth be told, I didn't have a whole lot of surprises for me. Yeah. You know, when it came to it, I mean, I love the fact that, you know, Melissa Leo dropped the F-bomb. That was hilarious. this?
She didn't realize it either.
I know, right?
She was like, when she got to the press room and she was answering questions, I was watching on the Oscars app on my iPad, and someone mentioned that, and she's like, oh, I said it?
The one dreaded word. No, but I loved it that happened, and then I don't think any of us were surprised with the best actor or best supporting actor or perhaps even best actress.
Let's back up a little bit here. Let's actually quickly run through them.
Yeah.
And I actually went to Oscars.com pre-show and selected my picks on the site. And the really cool thing was on the site, while I was logged in during the show, as they were picking them, it was saying, you matched, you didn't. And giving a tally, I think I got like 7 out of 24 or something. I was absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
I'm gonna just quickly breeze through these, starting at the bottom of the page. Best writing for original screenplay went to The King's Speech. I matched that one. Adapted screenplay went to The Social Network. I matched that one. And was that a surprise?
No.
Visual effects, Inception. I had Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows.
No, I wasn't surprised about that.
Sound mixing, The Social Network. I had Inception on that one. Sound editing, I had Tron Legacy. The winner was Inception. Short film length action was The Crush. I didn't know any of them, so I just picked one. So I'm not going to worry about that one. Short film animated, I picked Day and Night because it was the only one I saw. The Lost Thing won. Music went to Toy Story 3.
Randy Newman.
Original score went to The Social Network.
Yay for Trent.
Yep.
Makeup.
I was at a bar at karaoke that night when it was on. Mm-hmm. And I about fell out of my chair because how many people were staring going, that's Trent Reznor. That's Trent Reznor. I had to look up on my iPhone and look up pictures and go, yeah, it's that Trent Reznor. The same one that you're thinking of.
Yeah.
Because he definitely just looked, he was in his, you know, short hair and coat and tails and everything. So
yeah, it was looking good.
Yeah.
Best makeup went to the Wolf Man. Now, here's the thing. Let's talk about this for a second here. Wolfman was a terrible movie. But the nice thing about the Academy is like, yeah, but they did great makeup.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they probably deserved the award. In general, the movie was terrible. Best Foreman film went to Beautiful. Film editing, The Social Network. I matched that one. Documentary short subject went to Strangers No More. I never saw any of them, so I'm not talking about my pick on that one. Documentary feature had the same problem. I picked Exit Through the Gift Shop because it was the only one I've heard of. Inside Job 1. Directing went to The King's Speech, even though I picked True Grit. Costume design went to Alice in Wonderland, which I matched.
Cool.
Cinematography went to Inception, which I said The Social Network. Art direction.
Really? You said cinematography, Social Network.
That's anyways.
No, I'm not doubt. I'm just like, I didn't see that as very cinematic. That's all.
It was the minor things. Anyways.
Oh, okay.
Art direction went to Alice in Wonderland. I just always thought that Alice in Wonderland was a terrible movie, so I didn't pick it for anything. And apparently, for the two awards I was up for, it won. Go fig. Best animated feature film, Toy Story 3. Is that a surprise?
I was surprised Tangled didn't get it though, because it was so highly touted toward the end there. I'm happy for.
I'm surprised it wasn't even on the nominations.
Yeah. Well, I guess what pisses me off, and I don't know if this is a valid argument or not, but you've got Toy Story 3, which is nominated for Best Animated Film. And Best Picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost thought, if I remember my Oscar history, I thought they created the Best Animated Film category
Because the animated films never win.
Right. Specifically to keep it out. So why did they bother nominating it for Best Picture? That's what I don't understand. I don't understand that nomination.
Because they had to fill 10 slots once they started doing the 10-slot thing. Ugh,
yuck. Mm-hmm. So we still love you, Dean.
We love you.
Brexit.
Best Actress in a Supporting Role, Melissa Leo, which we've already talked about.
I was so happy she got that.
I'm really happy that she got it. I still kind of wish that Hailee Steinfeld got it, although she should have been nominated for leading role. Was won by Natalie Portman. Yeah. Actor in a supporting role, Christian Bale. Anybody surprised on that?
No.
Actor in a leading role, Colin Firth.
No surprise there.
Was on there. Although I do have to say, all of them were pretty good, although I'm not sure about James Franco or Javier Bardem, but in case. And the winner of Best Picture, The King's Speech, and we kind of spoiled that before. So,
yeah.
That is the Academy Awards.
Shall we talk about the show for a moment?
Sure.
I'll be honest and say I didn't watch the show. So
I didn't watch the show. I didn't have a TV.
No.
Oh. So I'm the Oscars app, so I saw a little bit of the backstage stuff, but
gotcha. Yeah, like James Franco just seemed like he was coming down off of something the entire time.
Anne Hathaway was carrying the whole thing.
Yeah, Anne Hathaway was definitely carrying the whole thing, and she is not a variety actress. Do you know what I mean? Like the song and dance and comedy, and you know, like she's not that versatile.
Right.
So it kind of looked like a mannequin doing it. You know what I mean? The whole time. And so while she was really trying, James Franco was literally like, I get the joke. Like he was like tweeting during the show, but he's on stage tweeting while Anne is doing stuff.
Right.
Do you know what I'm like, what the, and the whole time he was, and even in the pre-show stuff, when they would show James Franco, he was like, yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like,
he's too cool for school.
Yeah. You're an idiot. You know, and I read some article though that the Academy loved it and wants them back next year, but I don't know if that's true or not.
Well, you know, the Academy is pushing hard for a younger and younger audience, so
yeah. Who knows?
And then I heard that when Billy Crystal, who has hosted several of these award shows before, came on stage and he got a standing ovation. That should actually tell them that you should probably just keep it with Billy Crystal.
Well, Alec Baldwin showed up in one of their spoof movies, and the whole place went crazy. You could hear it.
Yeah.
You know, and so, I mean, I think ultimately they just got out of whack, you know, and then I don't know what Anne Hathaway was doing with this whole, like, she did this on my own from Les Mis kind of thing, which was all dedicated to Hugh Jackman. Basically, like, Hugh Jackman wouldn't sing a duet with her, so she was, like, calling him out by singing On My Own to him. It was really odd. And just a lot of it, you know, they also kept picking on Jesse Eisenberg, which was so weird. They kept calling, if you read back, go back and read some of the articles about it, but they were literally like, anytime be like, Jesse, we know it's late, but your mom will let you stay out late tonight. You know, like kind of stuff. And like, even to the point of, there was some joke, I can't even remember how she said it, but it was something about like, you know, all these movies had to do with sex, except that one, because Jesse Eisenberg couldn't get laid. Or something, you know, things like that. And it's like, what?
Was there a particular reason why they were picking on him? Or was just...
I don't know what the point
they,
was.
They threw a dart and it landed on him. And it's like, okay, we'll make fun of him.
I guess. I don't know. But it was a very odd show. You know, and a lot of people are also blaming Bruce Vilanch because he wrote it, of course. So it's kind of interesting. But just part of the show and part of the drama. Yeah. But ultimately, the people who won were not surprises. You know what I mean? So it was kind of a formality.
I haven't watched the Oscars, the actual Oscars, in quite a while. And my problem is, while I enjoy watching it, it just goes on forever. And it's like, you guys could like consolidate this down quite a bit. So I just, I don't watch it. And then when I get up in the morning, it's, you know, here's
you know the answers.
Right. You know? So, and any of the good parts, I'll be able to watch on the internet anyway. So,
fair enough. That's my report.
All right. Sorry, I got to stop playing around on Oscars.com. They've got a bunch of videos in there, the thank you cams, where basically they got 45 seconds on stage, but you have as much time as you want at the thank you cam backstage, and they post up the videos later on. So so you can see that. They got 27 videos. They got Melissa Leo, Aaron Sorkin, etc. On there. Aaron Sorkin, though, I think was like only like 5 seconds long or something. He was 24 seconds. He just says, yeah, like it was like he just thought it was kind of the same thing of as on stage. It seemed very, very flippant. And great writer, but I feel like he is an ass, but that's just me.
That's why he and Kristen Chenoweth keep breaking up.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Let's go on into the past. I don't mind, but you better promise me I'll be back in time. Going back in time, we go back and look at a parody movie by ye old Zucker Brothers and Jim Abrams, Top Secret from 1984, starring Val Kilmer and Lacey Goodrich and Peter Cushing, who's in the entire movie for all of 5 minutes, maybe less, and he's got a lot of makeup on.
Yeah, I found it hilarious that he got top billing in this movie for the amount of screen time he was in. And if you didn't, well, I mean, I was kind of watching this movie and not watching this movie at the same time. So it was like, oh yeah, that's Peter Cushing. And I guess it doesn't translate very well now. It's been so long, but you know, he was kind of a big deal back in the day, you know, this really big classically trained actor being in this goofy spoof movie. Well,
you also have Omar Sharif in there too.
Yeah. Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
But yeah, and the fact that it was Val Kilmer's first film, and he actually looked, you know, kind of young and hip and cool. You know what I mean? So, tells you what 25 years can do.
Well, but, I'm trying to think. Yeah. What year did Top Gun 86?
Top Gun.
Right around that, yeah. I'm going to say yes.
When in doubt, IMDb, Top Gun. I just got 1986, yep.
Woo! I win the prize. But it just amazes to me how much older he looks in the two film. Like, I mean, one in 84, he looks like he could have been like a teeny bopper, like, you know, 17 years old.
Mm-hmm. Leif Garrett.
Exactly. And then you go a couple years later to when he's Iceman in Top Gun. I'm like, oh my God, it looks like he aged like 15 years between two movies. Holy.
And put on about 15 pounds of muscle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he's put on since then about 50 to 100 pounds of fat. Have you seen a picture of him recently? Have you seen his like main picture on IMDb?
No.
Oh my God, he did not gain weight gracefully. I will tell you that.
Wow.
He's one of those guys who. Oh my God. I mean, I think there's probably at his current weight a current picture of him that actually looks better than that picture. I have no idea how that picture became his primary photo, but he is not.
His publicist
good.
Needs to fix that.
Yeah, they need to do something. And I think I was flipping through and there were some other angles or something where he looked a lot better. But it's terrible. They need to do something.
Yeah, from 1999 to 2010. Holy crap. He kind of looks like a fat Gary Shandling now.
Yeah, it's true.
That's weird.
Absolutely horrible. But
awesome.
We're not talking about this. We're talking about his first movie. A spy movie spoof, for lack of a better word. Basically, East Germany is plotting to destroy some submarines and to distract everybody. They're holding a cultural festival, and they invite American rock and roll legend singer at the of the time, Nick Rivers, to come over.
Right.
Actually, I think they had somebody else, but they ended up being their replacement or something like that.
Mm.
And hilarity ensues.
Yeah. I put this on here back when we were talking about it because I had not seen this in a really long time. But I do remember it being one that I really did enjoy. It definitely has a lot of good spoof moments. You know, I think I also liked that, you know, that they spoofed the Blue Lagoon. You know what I mean? Like, who couldn't do that? You know,
right.
There's certain, you know, lots of different movies that they spoof in this. And I liked that it felt very, there's a lot of very Monty Python kind of jokes in this one that others don't get, aren't able to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think especially like the latrine, you know, like that whole,
latrine.
These are our men, you know, like, and they start going through all the names and it's like deja vu. You did it. That felt very,
don't I know you from somewhere?
Yeah. I know.
The quality.
Those came off very, very quality done, very, you know, history of the world. Well done. And you know, I don't particularly care for the whole rock and roll thing and the Val singing kind of thing, but
the whole, see, I'm having a problem with this movie. The whole time period setting is really not to my liking, and I don't, it's been forever since I've seen this movie. In fact, I can't honestly remember if I actually saw this whole movie before or if I'm just remembering the clips from the trailers that
right.
I've seen. I may have not seen this before today. And while I can appreciate a lot of the things that they spoofed, like Blue Lagoon and all that stuff, I think the Achilles heel of movies like this is the fact that unless you were alive at the time that a lot of this stuff happened, the humor doesn't translate very well.
I would agree.
Contextual.
Yeah. So you go throw this at, you know, a younger person, and they're not going to get the whole reason why the main her other love interest, why he's running around with the guy, you know, Christopher Atkins hairdo the whole time.
Right.
You know.
And I guess that's the same thing for me. Like, I actually did make a note about this, which I thought is interesting that you put it that way, is growing up in the 70s and 80s, like, the one of the biggest jokes that I laugh out loud on in this movie is when he's just like, and to celebrate, oh, here comes the East German women's wrestling team. You know what I mean? And it's like, but today, you know, like a kid growing up today would never get that.
Right.
You know, like, because we know what it goes back to. It goes back to the 76 and 80 Olympics and the women and the East German women's swimming team who were all taking steroids and looked like men. You know what I mean? And like, so it's like,
well, I think
allegedly.
I think a lot of younger viewers would be confused just by the fact that, well, for one thing, East Germany doesn't exist anymore.
Right, exactly.
East Germany.
Before I realized or was able to hone in on the time period that this movie was spoofing, I thought they were spoofing World War II. Because
right.
East Germans come off very, very, very Nazi-like.
Mm-hmm.
True.
And not really sort of communist-like. So it was kind of like, it was a little bit of confusion there until I was, because, I mean, with the music and the rock and roll and all that, it kind of places it very, you know, late 40s, early 50s kind of thing. So
the Elvis era.
Yeah. That's really kind of me what this movie is spoofing, is kind of like the Elvis movies, sort of, you know, like if there's a movie where Elvis becomes a spy for the Americans and, you know, this would be a spoof of it, you know?
Yeah.
So I found parts of it funny. I found the same scene with the East German team there pretty funny. The one that made me laugh the most was the scene with the Pinto.
Yeah, of course. Oh, my gosh.
Again, that's probably also contextual.
Oh, very.
I mean, how many people remember the Pinto issue?
Or why that would be funny. Why the fact that it just touching something that lightly and blowing up would be funny. There's a lot of things like that in this movie that are just kind of like,
why are you frowning?
have to know some things before
the Geneva Convention requires me to frown. Mm-hmm. like I was like, what? Yeah, there's definitely certain, you know, like, but I think in retrospect, and this is something we're going to probably debate about shortly, you know, all spoof movies are so pop culture at that time.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You know, and based off of things. So, you know, you gotta take it in the context, you know.
I would debate that. Mainly because I don't think all spoof movies are particularly time based. Some are subject based.
True. Okay, you know, fair enough.
Which we'll talk more about.
Yeah. Don't stop the conversation. But ultimately is Top Secret gonna be one that I'm gonna run out to want to see it and watch annually? No.
I'm glad I own it.
Right. Oh yeah, totally. I mean, and I wouldn't have put it on here if I didn't have fond memories of the movie. Do you know what I mean? And I do have fond memories of this movie. So there are aspects that I don't like, but I also, you know, just some of the spoof in general is memorable. And that's why I like this one particularly in a lot of ways. You know, when we talk about Airplane, everybody has visuals of Airplane, you know, or you know, or line memories of Airplane. I have some visuals and line memories of Top Secret. So I encourage people to watch it and make their own perception, you know, get their own perspective on it.
Yeah, I think the Zucker brothers and Jim Abrams, they're really good at doing the essentially timely jokey movies. I mean, they've got Airplane, Top Secret, The Naked Gun, Hot Shots, looks like a Jane Austen's Mafia. Actually, looks like Jim Abrams actually wrote the screenplay for Scary Movie 4. Mm. Learn something new.
I find it funny that the three of them collectively are referred to in the singular as Zaz.
Yeah.
I was reading a bunch of things when I was researching this movie, and I'm like, Zaz, what the hell is Zaz? They keep saying blah, 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 Zaz. And I'm like, oh, it's the initials of their last names.
Z-A-Z.
Yeah. I'm like, who the hell is this Zaz person?
Yeah, I definitely appreciate their collaborations for sure. Mm-hmm. I love their movies. Although I think some of the newer ones I've kind of not liked so much and probably need to watch them again just in case. Like Scary Movies, I have never wanted to see a scary movie ever.
Mm-hmm.
So if they've wrote, directed some of the scary movies, maybe they're okay. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they had their nice stride in the 80s and early 90s, and then everything went to crap. Or something. I don't know. But that is that. 76% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Forgot to mention that. I looked up the what Roger Ebert wrote about it. He really liked it.
Yeah, he loved it.
He loved that movie. So this movie.
Yeah, right. I found it funny because the review was him debating with his friend who thought it was awful, and he was like, "You're stupid. I think this movie's awesome."
Because it's clever, but he also probably wrote that at the time that it came out in the theaters, which also made all the jokes very timely.
Oh, right. His review was written July 1st, 1984. So.
So
very timely.
That will definitely affect it. All right. So what have we learned from this movie? We have learned never order the Ripple. Swedish is essentially English backwards. The East Germans hated the Montgomery Ward's catalog. Never used the quote unquote anal intruder unsupervised. And remember, European power outlets have a different voltage. And that is what we learned from Top Secret. And I need to finish writing that. English backwards. All I had here was Swedish.
I know. I was like, what is that?
Fortunately, I know what it is. This is one of my favorite comedies. It's got this strange, subtle, but silly and absurd all at the same time. It's weird, but I love it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this is probably one of my least favorite spoof movies. There's just, so for some reason, the combination of the story and the setting and then some of the comedy just doesn't work for me. I did find parts of it funny, but there are parts of it that I just didn't find funny at all. And the whole Nazi take on the East Germany thing just throws me for a loop. I don't know why I'm so hung up on that, but I am. So,
well, I hate to be Switzerland, but you know, I'm kind of has its moments, not the best, but not the worst. You know, and like I like the contextual stuff because I still laugh at some of those things, particularly like of the 70s and 80s. You know, like East Germany and stuff. I chuckle at some of that stuff because I totally remember being, you know, learning about it in school and talking about those debates, and you know, and so it brings back some interesting memories from that time. So there. Da-dum-bum.
Dun-da-da. All right, so moving on to a little intermission. It's the beginning of the month, so we like to do a little top 10, top 5 list. And this time, because of Top Secret, we're going to be talking about spoof movies. Hold on a second. I need to get my Mel Brooks collection I've got.
Yeah, I think it's funny to go from, well, like I said, it's not one of my favorite spoofs to going to listing my probably top 10 favorite spoof movies. So you get a little taste of both extremes here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, does it look kind of like in the list, at least that you have? I didn't actually make more of a complete list, but I think you're pretty much right on the ball. That most of the movies are either Mel Brooks or Zucker Brothers movies.
Oh, Mel Brooks is like the father of the spoof movie.
The collection of Mel Brooks movies that I have, that I got this in a box set. The Mel Brooks collection has Robin Hood Men in Tights, 12 Chairs, To Be or Not to Be, Silent Movie, High Anxiety, Young Frankenstein, Blazing Saddles, History of the World Part 1. It did not include Spaceballs, so I had to get that separately.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that is just a list of great spoof movies. Just right there. I mean, I would definitely say
that. Yeah, but there are a few that miss. There are a few that are missing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, in that list.
So how do you want to do this? You want to just list them off? Or do you want to talk about each one of them? Because at the top of my list, I have Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
I would concur. I'd go there.
Spoof on Crusade movies.
Yeah. That one, I love the fact that I saw that in high school. It was like an assignment to watch that movie. You know? So it was awesome. Best homework I ever had. My next one was Blazing Saddles. Because I hate Westerns, but I love Blazing Saddles. Blazing Saddles cracks me up. And you have to have a thick skin to watch Blazing Saddles, because there is some really, really, really strong, what would be considered non-politically correct humor.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. In that movie.
Black Sheriff?
Yeah. Then I have Austin Powers, and when I say Austin Powers, I'm talking about the first Austin Powers.
International Man of Mystery.
Yes. I put Hot Shots on here, because I had never seen that, or not seen it in a while, and that That was one of the movies where I watched it expecting to hate it and laughed my ass off the whole time. So yay for that. And then, of course, I can't make this list up without putting Airplane on there.
Mm-hmm.
Robin Hood, Men in Tights, another classic as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Spaceballs, how can you not love a spoof on Star Wars? And then The History of the World, Mel Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is one where, yes, it's based on stuff, you know, it's temporally spoofing stuff, but it's spoofing history. So,
yeah,
you know, it'll always be funny as long as you know your history.
Non-pop culture stuff.
Yeah. Police Academy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, not really pop. I'm sure there were probably some pop culture things in there, but not it's not laden with pop culture references. And then Galaxy Quest.
Which, I would concur. Galaxy Quest is on my list.
Yeah, Galaxy Quest, another one where it's making fun of a specific genre, namely more of like the Star Trek type, you know. It's funny because it's spoofing not only the type of material, so like science fiction, Star Trek, but it's spoofing that whole sort of the fact that you've got actors that have they're only known for this one thing that made them famous, and some of them kind of hate themselves for it. And I love how it kind of works that whole thing together.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the fact that you can watch the whole DVD in what's their language called? Ugh. It's, you know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about. I can't think of the name. Though.
Yeah. You can watch the whole DVD dubbed in that.
Oh gosh. Wow. Well, I'm going to go with I would totally concur with Monty Python stuff. However, I will say that I'm much more of a History of the World fan than I am a Holy Grail fan.
Mm-hmm.
But I thoroughly enjoy the Holy Grail as well. So in place of the Holy Grail, I would put in The Princess Bride.
Ooh.
Yeah,
that, is that a spoof, so, though?
Yes, it is.
Totally. But I would go there with it, and then I would I also, as cheesy as it is, one that always gets me is Not Another Teen Movie.
Ugh, the opening scene of that movie. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
I haven't seen any space movies for the
but
past.
But not another teen movie. I mean, is one that of that genre of the more recent ones that I have to give a nod to, especially like when they're spoofing, you know, like Bring It On and stuff like that. It just makes me talk. But I would also have. I'm glad you said Police Academy. I was planning to talk about that, but you caught me for that one. So, yay. And I also have to go with Young Frankenstein,
I had to debate between that and Blazing Saddles. I'm like, one of them's going to be on the list, but I don't know if I have room for both of them.
Yeah. And the only other one we haven't mentioned this one, and I think it deserves be on there somewhere, is Naked Gun, the original.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I'd have to say so too. I'm gonna go with that definitely. I'm very much along the lines of Robin Hood, Men in Tights, Spaceballs, Airplane. I agree that Top Secret I don't think should necessarily be on the top five or top ten. I just really like it. Austin Powers movies, just that all of them. I liked all of them. Did you guys not like two or three?
I liked the second one. I didn't find it as funny as the first one. The third one, I had a hard time making it through that one.
Is it more of it's just more of the same?
Yeah.
Because the nice thing about the Austin Powers movies was they basically took those older spoofs, the idea of the older spoofs, and brought them more into the modern day, you know. And that's the type of humor that I like, because some of these things, because it's just the way they did it worked. While when you look at the other things like scary movie, not another teen movie, etc. Mm-hmm. There's just something about them that make them completely unappealing. There's nothing about that movie that I want to see. Austin Powers, I want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Men in Tights is one of my favorite movies. And Cary Elwes is one of my comedy heroes. again, Princess Bride is a great choice for a spoof. Also, I put Vertigo in here, but actually I meant High Anxiety.
I was going to ask you about
Mel Brooks. Another Mel Brooks movie. Because that's what it's spoofing.
I know.
Vertigo.
I was like, Vertigo's not a spoof.
Well, I was just trying to do this. I was doing that on the top of my head.
Understand.
Let's see. Major League? No, that's not right. Yeah, that's a baseball.
Yeah.
Major League. So I'm gonna throw out Major League into there. Otherwise, I think we pretty much covered most.
Where are you typing?
On the spreadsheet.
Oh, on the spreadsheet. Okay, my bad.
On the spoof tab. The
page. Got you. I'm on the main page, and I'm like, where is he typing?
We can hear him typing furiously.
And then of course Hot Shots. Both Hot Shots. I just recently got the Hot Shots Part 2 and watched that too.
Yeah.
Which is incredible too. So Zucker Brothers and Mel Brooks pretty much take the cake on most of this, and then there's those few which slip in as being really well done. To me, for comedies, it's really hard to get me to like a comedy. And there's some people who can just quite do that. It can do that. And these are just a couple of the movies that I like. So, official top five CWL movies. So let's try to smash this in. Let's do five movies. I think we all agree on Robin Hood, Men in Tights as one of them. And this is in no particular order.
I think we all, I don't know if you agreed.
I'm hearing Spaceballs.
Spaceballs. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm hearing History of the World Part 2, or Part 1, sorry.
There's no Part 2.
I'm hearing Hot Shots.
Yeah.
From all of us.
Yeah.
I'm hearing Princess Bride. Is that fair for us?
Yes, definitely.
That's
4. Is that 4 or 5?
That's 5. I say started off with Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
Okay.
It's hard to stop, isn't it?
Yeah. All right, do you want to add on 5 more here? You want to keep going?
I enjoy the Robin Hood Men in Tights. Mm. However,
you got a veto?
I would like to naked gun it. I would like to naked gun it, or as much as I hate, I'd even airplane it over a Robin Hood.
How about we do both and we keep going? Let's do 10.
Okay.
Let's go.
Young
Gun. We'll put Airplane on there.
Blazing Saddles has to be on there.
Yeah. Okay, I'd give you Blazing Saddles.
And we got 2 more slots. Two more or 3 more? 3 more slots.
Let's go with the modern Not Another Teen Movie. Is that fair?
Veto.
Well, Jeff hasn't seen it, right? So.
Police Academy?
Yeah, we'll go with Police Academy. Honestly, I've never seen Police Academy, but I keep hearing things, so. And considering the cast, I am not going to veto that. But if that ends up showing up on our list.
So does that mean we get to put Men in Tights back on here?
Did you put Austin Powers on there?
Oh, no. But we have 2 more slots, so Austin Powers and Men in Tights.
Okay, then that's fair.
All right, so the official list in no particular order. Naked Gun, Spaceballs, History of the World Part 1, Hot Shots, Princess Bride, Airplane, Blazing Saddles, Police Academy, Austin Powers, and Robin Hood Men in Tights as some of the must-see spoof movies. And with that, we move on from our intermission into the present. Right here, right now, we went to see Academy Award-winning actor or actress Natalie Portman in the movie that she won it for, Black Swan. Going from a spoof to this type of movie?
What, yeah. Talking about polar opposites. Holy crap.
I still have a headache.
Rotten Tomatoes as 88% fresh.
Yeah.
So people really like this movie. Here's my problem with the movie. It makes my head hurt, yes, but it makes me want to see it again to make it stop hurting. If that makes any sense.
I would agree with you.
Yeah.
Because it was so good, but so psychological. Like, it's that you kind of have to, it feel like you have to see it again and again, like a second, at least a second time, if not a third, maybe even a fourth time, to really help get everything to sink in. Because when I left the theater and was driving home, I was just trying to just kind of process what I just saw.
Did you see it today, Jeff?
No, I saw it on Sunday.
Okay. Yeah, I saw it on Sunday too, Sunday afternoon, which was kind of interesting because I don't know how your guys' theater was, but mine was packed.
Yeah, I had a lot of people.
Wow, really?
I think there was a lot of people that are trying to see it before the Oscars.
Oh, maybe that's why.
So, I mean, yeah, I walked in. I was like, holy cow, there's a lot of people in here. Because usually I get to the theaters pretty early, and I'm usually the first person in there. And there was like, wow. I'm like, holy cow, there's a lot of people in here. And a lot of
I saw it Tuesday. I saw it Tuesday because I was out of town all weekend.
Yeah.
So it was, yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't full. I mean, it was just
a few. There was a lot of, I mean, I would say the average age of the people in the theater with me was probably in the upper 50s at least.
Huh.
It was a lot of older people in there seeing that movie, which was kind of weird for some scenes in the movie. Because there was a whole lot of, female masturbation in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, it was weird, you know?
You need to go home and touch yourself.
I just felt dirty. I was like, I'm in this movie watching Natalie Portman touch herself, and
Mila Kunis put her hand in her cooter.
I'm in a theater with like 60-year-old women, and it just, I felt dirty.
The Golden Girls masturbated.
I know.
B. Arthur.
God. I love B. Don't get me wrong. Love B. Arthur. Don't want to think of her
masturbating. I think masturbating.
I don't want to think of any woman masturbating.
See, I'm just going to come out and say it. Here's the thing about this. I had no real intentions of seeing this movie. Okay. It wasn't until we put it on the list that it actually was on my radar to go see. Only because of all the Aronofsky movies I have seen, well, the last one I watched of his, which was The Fountain, made me want to just find him and slap him for making me waste two and a half hours of my time watching this movie. I only seen parts of The Fighter only because I was so shying away from his movies that it was just like, I'm not interested. Requiem for a Dream made me want to kill myself because it was so depressing. Pi, I think, was the one and only one of his movies that really I enjoyed.
No, I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah. So as I sat there and watched this movie, I had already seen all the effects things because I knew I wasn't going to go see the movie in the theater. So I'm like, well, I'm just going to watch all these behind the scenes, how they did all the effects and the crazy things. So her whole transformation and the stuff in the mirror, and I had seen all that stuff already. Mm-hmm. So there was nothing really like, I was looking to see in the context of the movie. That was about what was interesting to me. Like, I knew that she was seeing things, but I wanted to see if it was like, you know, if maybe by chance he had broken away from his typical formula of person slowly descends into madness, you know, type of film. So I sat through the whole movie just kind of wondering, like, I'm trying to figure out, and I don't even want to limit it to just this movie. What is – I'm trying to understand what Mr. Aronofsky is trying to get across in his movies. Yeah. Because to me, all his movies are about the same thing. They just change settings. They change protagonists. And the obsession or the focus of the protagonist changes. But to me, it's like –
But they always have an obsession or – yeah, they always have some kind of obsession. They always have some kind of – descent into madness.
It always becomes their undoing. You're like, you know, they're trying to be perfect at something or live up to something or – you know, and it just – it tears them apart. And so it's like – I don't know if he's just like a tortured individual that – or he gets off on – looking at this way. I don't get it. And he's got two more movies already in production, and I don't know what they're about, but I know one of them's called The Wolverine.
Oh yeah, and that's actually that's the Wolverine as in X-Men Wolverine.
Yeah,
starring Hugh Jackman.
I'm kind of scared because I'm like,
well, Wolverine does descend into madness.
He does.
You know, perhaps it's right up his alley.
Ugh, God.
So what's your description of this Darren Aronofsky movie? A Descent into Madness. How about this one? Descent into Madness.
Mm-hmm.
How about this one? Descent into Madness. Apparently he can't find some other screenplay or story that he wants to tell, which is not a tragedy and a descent into madness.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, did y'all
see Yogs are wrong.
Or the wrestler. I'm sorry. I said the fighter. It's the
fighter, but yeah, it's the wrestler.
The wrestler.
Did you see it?
Nope.
I did not get to see it all.
Okay. Nope. So I can't confirm or deny that is about somebody descending into madness. Cause so.
Well, okay. Here's the Black Swan for me. Completely, thoroughly enjoyed the performances. I thought, you know, like, I thought Natalie Portman acted extremely well. She totally killed this part. Barbara Hershey as the obsessed mom, obsessive compulsive stage mom, totally rocked it. Mila Kunis as the bitchy dancer who wants to take the lead, bought it. You know,
although she wasn't really a bitchy dancer who wanted to take the lead.
Well, she was the new girl. She was coming in.
She was the new girl, and she was like, "Congratulations, I'd like the part." But I mean, you know, you got it.
What I mean by that, what I mean by that is, that wasn't who she was. That's who Natalie Portman
perceived her as.
Yeah, perceived her as.
But I didn't even take the character and everything that I saw as like that.
No.
Yeah,
but before we get too far with that, first of all, I have to say, holy cow, that was Mila Kunis, because I was like, I went through the whole movie and I'm like, who is that girl? I know that girl from somewhere. And then I sat and watched the credits and I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. I'm
like, I can't believe that's her, because she did a good job. She did an awesome job. Totally made me, you know, forget that 70s show and Family Guy. So,
yeah.
I thought it was awesome, you know. So I would agree with you, Steve. The performances of the people, they entertain me. The story, I don't know. I was just kind of. I felt like I was along for the ride.
There was no story. It had like a plot. It's like this person's descent into madness, but it to me didn't have a story. If that makes any sense.
I kept in the back of my head the whole time I'm watching this. I kept going, "This is Ballerina Fight Club." That's what this is, because if you ever seen Fight Club, it's about a dude who basically fabricates in his head
everything.
Another person, another side of himself. He thinks it's another person.
Yeah.
You know, but it's really just him. It's the two sides of himself. So when he thinks he's going to sleep, this other person is actually going along and doing all these things, and he doesn't realize that till the very end of the movie. But so the sort of disjointed psychosis that she kind of goes through here, where she keeps seeing this, you know, quote unquote black swan version of herself, it kept reminding me very much of Fight Club. So that's what I kept calling this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Ballerina Fight Club. Sounds like an awesome reality show.
They're just whipping each other with their rear kicks and stuff. I also have to say one of my highlights for this, albeit it was short-lived in the movie, was I thought Winona Ryder, the part that Winona Ryder played as Beth,
mm-hmm.
the decrepit on her way out, you know.
The twilight of her career.
Yeah, in the twilight of her career. And you don't know how much of that character was enhanced by her perception, mm-hmm. You know, because she, you know, because all we ever really see her as is completely drunk and, you know, her.
Hit by a car.
Yeah, exactly. Those kind of things. But that could have just been what, in her mind, she wanted that to happen so she could get the lead.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, in some way, shape, or form. But I liked her performance in this movie. You know, and it actually harkened back to Heather's a lot for me. And some of the motions that she, you know, like, lick it up, baby, lick it up. Like, I felt like she was, like, in that, like, why are you such a bitch? Like, kind of thing. And then when she stabbed herself in the face, I was not anticipating that. I expected her to cut her wrist, but I didn't expect her to start stabbing herself in the face. That was a little bit of a surprise.
Was freaky. Now, the only question is, did that really happen? Or was that just another figment of Nina's imagination?
Yeah, exactly. Good question.
That's what you're left to wonder. The other thing I did like, and I had a discussion with my friend about this, was the fact that I like that they didn't hover or focus on any of the things like all these ballerinas. Like, there's a whole lot of bulimia going on. You know what I mean? Like, all the stereotypical skinny girl ballerina problems, they were just kind of like, yeah, that's how it is, so we're just going to do it and move along. We're not going to focus on it, you know?
Yeah, she kept throwing up from nervousness. It wasn't perfection. They could have gone that route to really help, which could have enhanced the whole perfection issue and why she might be going into psychosis and stuff because she's not getting enough to eat. You know, they could have gone that route, but they really kept it in her head versus understanding the pressure she was under. Like, when I analyze it talking with you guys, I kind of can get it a little more. But watching it on my own, I was just like, oh, what the fuck?
What's going on?
What the hell? But, you know, like, I get it. The pressure's on it. She wants to break out. She's got this girl that she needs to beat out for the part. That's already in the company. She's got the director who's on her and pressuring her to try to do something in order to get the lead. You know what I mean? Like, you know, she's got her mom pushing her, or get out of the company, or if you don't get a lead. She's got all these pressures on her. We get it. You know, and then the new girl comes in who might take the lead. X, Y, Z, all these things. And so she's pushing. And it just drives her over the edge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she had the perfect moment. You know, so it all makes sense, but at the same time, it was just like getting from point A to point B. There was a lot of whoa, what the hell, what, you know. But overall, again, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought she danced beautifully.
She practiced for a year.
Yeah, yeah.
Before this movie started. And then she did have a double. So there was somebody that was actually, you know, dancing for her in some scenes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'll give her, you know, kudos for actually. Well, they said, Aronofsky said that one of the whole reasons why this movie really was able to be made was because of her willingness to train. Not only did she train for a year before the movie came out, but she also paid for like 7 or 8 months of that training on her own.
Wow.
When she got hurt when they were filming this, she bruised a rib or broke a rib or something. And
I think I saw something about this. Like,
yeah,
it pushed up underneath her like one of her ribs actually pushed up underneath her, the rib above it. So they had to change their, how they did some of the lifts during the time while it healed or something.
Yeah, they had to lift her by her armpits. Yeah. But the thing about it, what I was getting to, is the fact that when she got hurt, they didn't have the money to have a medic on the set. So she was kind of like, what do you mean we don't have a medic? She's like, you know what? She's like, if it comes down between me having my own trailer and us having a medic, she's like, I don't want the trailer. We need
right, did you get this from the David Letterman interview?
The next day, her trailer was gone.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
So, you know.
I remember seeing all that information right before the show at the Alamo. They were playing an interview she had with David Letterman. And I think that's probably where you were getting that information, or where that information came from.
Yeah, I just read it on IMDb.
Yeah, that's probably where they took it from.
Yeah. So, and the other thing is that I now, that because I didn't know this or notice it while I was watching the movie, but supposedly the soundtrack is a variation of Swan Lake, the ballet, but it's played backwards. So I'm like, now I want to go back and listen to the soundtrack just to see what it sounds like, because that's a very sort of like Inception-like thing to do. Where they slowed everything down.
It would
down.
Make sense when they get to the point, you know, when she turns into the black swan and kind of stuff, for it to go backwards. Since it's a mirror image, or, you know, all those kinds of things. So.
Right.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So what did we learn from Black Swan? We have learned that Natalie did a convincing job as a prima ballerina.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
These bitches be crazy.
They're all crazy.
Always make sure your mother is not in the room before you start masturbating.
Yeah.
Very good. That was an ironic moment, wasn't it? Hey.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's definite thinking movie. With the one viewing, I didn't really like it that much, but kept making me thinking after the show. So I feel after multiple viewings, it will get me to like it better. Well done. That's all I got to say.
And I just say, you know, we have a Darren Aronofsky film that deals with a person who's got an obsession and addiction in their lives that slowly causes them to self-destruct. We've never seen that before.
Admittedly, I got lost, but I enjoyed the movie for what its visuals and performances were worth. Maybe I'm just not smart enough for this one. Frowny face. But I think I get it after talking with you guys about it and actually having a time to process it. I think I get it. Yay!
All right. And, of course, that's been out for a while. But, hey, sometimes we need to pick a movie which has been out for a while, so... And with that, let's actually move to something that's not out. Let's move to something that's...
There's gonna be the future soon. I won't always be this way. When the things that make me weak and strange get engineered away. It's gonna be the future soon.
In the future, we're talking about Your Highness, starring Danny McBride, Zooey Deschanel, James Franco, and Natalie Portman. Yeah.
Look at all these weird connections today.
James Another Franco. Another
Portman movie. We talked about Franco. We talked about spoof movies. Weirdness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, weirdness.
This podcast is just a spoof sandwich.
I will tell you on this, is the only thing that would get me to go to this movie is if this was put onto the list and Natalie Portman would give me some. Otherwise, everything else says, but that's just my opinion.
Well, that's what we're here for. See, to me, this screams very much Princess Bride like for me. So,
oh no!
Oh, I think it does for me.
No!
Don't tell me what I feel. Damn you!
Yeah.
This is. I can see this as kind of trying to be and failing utterly miserably, because the Princess Bride was a was much more subtle. And this is one of those, they're pulling out oddly stop slapstick modern day comedies, which suck ass. So, this may try to get that feel. It's failing utterly miserably already, even with just the trailer. I don't think I can be convinced otherwise.
I was laughing my butt off for a lot of the trailer, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I laughed more at the trailer for this than I did through the whole movie of the Top Secret.
Hot Shots? Yeah.
No, Hot Shot, I was laughing.
You know what I was feeling through this entire trailer? Kill me!
Wow. Well, it's funny because after watching this trailer, after seeing the Oscars, I could just see it was James Franco's smug little face, because he does have a little smug face in this movie, like the whole time, like in the a lot of it. Mm-hmm. But I will say though that Natalie Portman kicking the Danny McBride's ass, I saw a lot of Laura Croft in there.
That was cool,
and I was very impressed. Because she had the English accent and she was like pumped around. I was just like, Portman, you need to be Lara Croft. So I now am just going to start this whole little thing about like, screw the other chick, Portman for Lara Croft.
Yeah, I can see that. I'll chip in on that.
Yeah. So, I mean, the movie, the particular trailer, it has me intrigued. For DVD. I don't know that it has me wanting to run out and see it in the big screen. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Mm. But it has me interested in seeing it, just maybe not at the movies.
Yeah. I'll pass altogether. So basically it's saying when Prince Fabius, his bride, is kidnapped, he goes on a quest to rescue her, accompanied by his lazy, useless brother, Thaddeus. Which means this is going to be terrible just from the names that they made up. Okay.
Fabio.
Also, Danny McBride.
Well, at least James Franco, it's not, you know, he doesn't have blonde hair and they're calling him Prince Fabio.
Right.
At least he just looks like he's from, like, I don't know, from, like, Charleston or from, Southern California.
Right. Well, the smug look is probably not a big acting stretch for him. He's not.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. He's playing it probably close to the hip there.
Yeah. Well, and if you read the bit of trivia, you realize that what we're seeing is, a wide, vast majority of this is completely, done improv.
Yeah. Which is more perfect.
Which is going to be real interesting because, they got very little direction. So ain't no telling where this is going to go.
Sounds like a movie right up my alley.
Yeah. Are you, waiting for Guffman and that dog show one?
Best in Show.
Best in Show. Weren't those two also very improvised?
I don't know. Best in Show was pretty funny.
Yeah, Best in Show is pretty funny.
I hate
streaming
those movies. So this is just more proof that most likely I will absolutely despise Your Highness. So, just saying.
Oh, Jeff.
But I will admit, though, that if you put it onto the list, I will go see it.
I don't think there's room for it on the list unless we change something.
Exactly.
Just saying. There is kind of a place that I would like to put something, but unfortunately it's in the past slot, so.
Well.
Yeah.
See this that? Comes, right this there? Comes this Good. Comes out when?
4/8.
Okay.
April 4/8, which is after this one. Actually, no, there's no one in the slot. That slot there. There's nothing in that slot for when it comes out. Just saying. So
comedy ensues.
So it
could be all I can say is there. somebody forced me to see Get Him to the Greek. So
hey, yeah, it's your choice. If you want to slip it in there, you're very welcome to. But you know, if you find something else that's better during that time, go for it. Your choice. Yeah. And remember the movies we see don't necessarily need to be good.
Oh no.
It can be movies, which it can be absolutely, utterly horrible.
I think some of the best conversations come from horrible movies, as long as you're willing to talk about them.
Right. And not walk out of them.
Well, the thing is, the only movie I've ever walked out of was not because I necessarily thought it was a bad movie. It's just, for the first time in my life, I felt very, 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 very uncomfortable being in that movie theater, so I left. So otherwise it could be an absolutely horrendous movie and I will stick through the entire movie. I mean, here's a good example. The Last Airbender. Through that entire movie. Yes, I said the name.
Yes. You shall be struck down.
So
may M. Night Shyamalan appear in the back of your head.
Quick comments, since we're starting to wrap up here. The Razzies were awarded, and who was the big winner of the Razzies?
Oh, you didn't? I didn't see.
The Last Airbender.
Yay! Sweet.
Did it sweep?
I need to find it now.
Oh, okay.
Like I saw an article about it, but I can't remember. I couldn't remember where. Where is the website? Bing. Ah, there we go. TheRazzies.com. All right. Now, where do you show the losers? Because I wouldn't call them winners. Ah, there we go. So we've got...
it looks like
worst picture winner of 2010 was Last Airbender. The worst actor of 2010 was Ashton Kutcher. Worst actress was the four gal pals: Sarah Jessica Parker, Amy Cattrall, Kristen Davis, and Cynthia Nixon for Sex and the City 2. Worst eye gouging misuse of 3D, a special category for 2010. Was The Last Airbender, released in fake 3D. Worst director was Shyamalama Ding Dong. Worst screenplay was The Last Airbender, written by Shyamalama Ding Dong. Worst prequel, remake, ripoff, or sequel is Sex and the City 2.
Wow.
Worst supporting actor was Jackson Rathbone from The Last Airbender. And he was also in Twilight Saga Eclipse. Yeah. Worst actress was Jessica Alba in The Killer Inside Me, Little Fockers, Machete, and Valentine's Day. Like her Machete, so I'm assuming the reason why she won was because of one of the or all of the other movies.
The combination of everything.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
So that was the Razzies at the end of this. And I hate the Razzies because they keep popping up a window every time I switch pages.
Because it's
the world's worst websites. But
wow.
Which is sort of kind of ironic.
Oh, yeah.
If they had a perfect website, it would be more ironic to me.
Yeah, it's a crappy website.
Did we talk about our feelings on Your Highness? I think I already said mine. Kill me!
Yeah, I didn't think we had to specify our feelings. I think they were conveyed pretty eloquently. Jeff wants to jump off a cliff instead of seeing it. I'll go see it, and Steve is going to wait.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Looks hokey, but I'd see it on DVD.
So, coming to attractions now that we've gotten back on track. Next Next week we'll be looking at Batteries Not Included, which I found for $5 at Target the other day.
Wow.
So it's like, I need this, and I bought it. Second, we're going to see in the present Drive Angry. Prediction on how I'm going to feel on this is I'm going to think it's an absolutely terrible movie, but I had a fun ride and just think everybody should go see it just because it was a fun ride.
I have a feeling I'm just going to be angry.
And in the future, we'll be looking at Hannah. Speaking of more serious. So there's plenty of ways to contact us. Comment on our blog at movies.cubsoutloud.com or cubsoutloud.com/movie. Either way, same place. Email us at colmovies@gmail.com. Leave us a voicemail at 361-COL-TALK. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/COLmovies. Facebook, facebook.com/COLmovies, which is pretty much where all the Twitter stuff comes from. Also, please pop on iTunes, give us a review. We'd love to hear what you think of the show, as well as think of the movies that we talk about. Again, comment on the blog, shoot us an email, leave a voicemail, what have you. Let us know. We would like to hear. So with that, for me, for Fuzz, for Steven, take care.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, kid.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.